Good morning, everybody. So this morning my presentation is going to be about looking at phosphorus forms in crop residues or crop stubble left in the field after harvest, and using two different techniques, so a more traditional technique using chemical fractionation methods and also using solution 31 phosphorus nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy, or NMR. So this is one component of a project that myself and my co-authors have been working on, and really we've been trying to get a better understanding of the phosphorus forms in crop residues so we can make some better predictions about the fate and availability of residue phosphorus in cropping soils. So to get a better understanding of why we're so interested in residue phosphorus forms, we need to understand where it fits in the overall scheme of our soil phosphorus cycle. As we know, plants take up phosphorus from our solution pool. Majority of that pea will be translocated to the seed and removed at harvest, but you also have a component of phosphorus that remains in the stem, leaf, chaff and root components, and those different plant parts make up our residue phosphorus pool. As you can see from our residue phosphorus pool, we have a number of arrows coming out of that into the soil. In the first instance, we might have some orthophosphate or some soluble inorganic phosphorus, which could be directly leached into our solution phosphorus pool, where it would be equally available for plant roots to access, for microorganisms to take up, or it could become chemically fixed to soil. We also have some easily degradable organic P forms in crop residues, mainly being phospholipids or nucleic acids, and they'll be quite readily broken down by microorganisms and form a part of that phosphorus pool. And then when we get net turnover of that P, that will contribute back to the solution pool. There's also the potential for some residue phosphorus forms to form stable organic complexes in soil. So why are we so interested in methods to speciate residue P forms? As I've just shown in that diagram, speciation is important for determining its fate in soil. Widely used methods for phosphorus speciation are chemical fractionation methods. So that assumes the solubility of those different phosphorus species in a series of reagents. Majority of that work has been done using immature plant materials, which have higher total phosphorus concentrations and possibly other P forms, which we don't see in older stubble. When we first started this project, we used solution 31P NMR spectroscopy to do our initial sampling. Even though we knew that there's a significant body of literature using chemical fractionation methods, for us it was an easily accessible technique, and that's why we initially started using it. So after we'd done our first study using NMR, we decided to go back and have a look and see what NMR could tell us about the speciation of residue phosphorus when we use a chemical fractionation method. So ultimately what we want is better knowledge of phosphorus species, which can lead to better predictions of the potential phosphorus supply from residue phosphorus to soil and crops. So over the next two slides, I'll just go briefly over a sequential chemical fractionation method and also the NMR technique. As I said, sequential chemical fractionation methods characterise phosphorus species based on their assumed solubility in or reactivity towards a series of reagents. So there's numerous references that have outlined different chemical fractionation methods, but for plant materials, what you'll generally find are four steps. The first step would be phosphorus soluble in a weak acid or water solution, which is generally soluble P, or some people directly call that orthophosphate. Phosphorus soluble in a nonpolar organic solvent, which would be your phospholipid phosphorus, and phosphorus released by a reaction with potassium hydroxide or perchloric acid as your nucleic acid P. The fourth step is your residual phosphorus, which is just phosphorus that has not been extracted in the first three steps. For crop residue speciation using solution 31 NMR, you also need an extraction step, and for crop residues we were extracting with sodium hydroxide EDTA. So a slightly alkaline solution to increase the extraction of both inorganic and organic phosphorus forms, and the use of EDTA to complex paramagnetic ions in that solution to again increase the extraction efficiency and also the diversity of P forms that can be extracted. The issue with having a slightly alkaline solution is that you can get hydrolysis of some of the P species. For example, you might have phospholipids in your starting sample, but during that alkaline extraction, what will happen is you'll actually end up measuring the monomers of phospholipids, which are alpha and beta glycerophosphate. The key benefit of using this technique over the fractionation is that you can simultaneously measure several different phosphorus forms in your material. So this is a typical spectra that we see for crop residues. This is for PE stem residue, and you have a single peak for orthophosphate. You have, to the right of that, there's a cluster of organic phosphorus peaks, generally for residues associated with nucleic acids and phospholipids, and then you also have pyrophosphate out on the end. And in one of our initial studies, we found that the speciation doesn't really vary for different crop types. So we looked at 8 different crops, from wheat, barley, rye, through to fava beans and field peas, and they all had very similar phosphorus species in them. So all we're trying to do is a comparison of chemical fractionation methods with solution 31 and NMR spectroscopy. The aim was to test the key assumptions that underpin chemical fractionation methods, which is, are the chemical extractants selective for the intended phosphorus species? Would that extract actually release 100% of the intended phosphorus form? And what happened to other phosphorus species in the material during the extraction step? So were they transformed, and did that affect subsequent steps in the fractionation scheme? So this is just a diagram showing how we approached the methods. So we started off with a dried ground crop residue. In this case, it was oats. We then extracted that with one of the extractants, and I've listed the series of reagents that we looked at the bottom of the slide. So once that happened, you then had a solution or the extract, and you also had the residue remaining. For both of those components, we digested them using nitric acid digest and measured it with ICP to give us a total phosphorus concentration. And then for the extracts, we freeze-dried them and took them up in hydroxide EDTA and analysed them using NMR. And for the residues, we re-extracted them with hydroxide EDTA and then also measured them with NMR. So the reagents investigated, we looked at 2 different steps of the fractionation, which was the soluble P and the phospholipid phosphorus. So we looked at water, 0.2 normal perchloric acid and 10% trichloroacetic acid, and these were directly taken from 2 methods in the literature by Kaki and Hoag. One thing that I should mention is that we didn't do these steps sequentially, so generally that is how the methods are approached, but for this experiment we did the soluble P step on its own and the phospholipid phosphorus step on its own, just because it was much easier to have a look at the P forms and what was being extracted in the individual steps. So this slide shows a typical spectra that we see for our oat residue. It's the same spectra, it's just a narrow and a wide view. So we can see A is orthophosphate, B is that cluster of organic peaks, and C is pyrophosphate out on the end. To the right, you can see the percentage of the different phosphorus forms that make up that oat residue. So 54% being orthophosphate, 11 for lipids, 6 for pyro and nucleic acid. And the remaining phosphorus was not extractable in hydroxide EDTA. So this is our starting material, and this is what we're comparing our different fractionation steps to. So this is looking at the solution. So we had our oat residue, we then extracted it using water, and what P forms were in that actual solution. So firstly, we're seeing orthophosphate, as we'd expect. Many studies have shown that a large amount of phosphorus in crop residues is water soluble. We have the absence of pyrophosphate in both the extract, and later you'll see in the remaining residue as well. Probably have got enzymatic degradation of that pyro-P, which has been converted to ortho-P. And then interestingly, we've also got some organic phosphorus in that extract solution. So some of that organic P associated with phospholipids or nucleic acids is actually being extracted in the first step for soluble P, which will certainly have implications if you were intending to extract those species in the second or third step of the fractionation series. We then took that extract and analysed it using colorimetry. So to have a look at the soluble inorganic P and soluble organic P in that fraction. I'm just showing this data to put some numbers around how that compared to what we were measuring using the NMR detecting as orthophosphate. So these are our 4 different extracts for water-soluble P. And each one, so we have the same residue, so it has the same total amount of phosphorus starting for each of those. And then we can see for most of the extracts, the soluble inorganic P was matching quite similarly to what we were detecting as orthophosphate using the NMR. It was for the water sonicated and the trichloroacetic acid extracts that were actually extracting even more, so some organic phosphorus, which meant that it didn't correlate that well with what we would measure from the NMR as just being ortho-P. So now we're just looking at the remaining residue. So we just looked at what the solution had. So now we're looking at what's left in the residue after we've done a water-soluble extraction. So here we can still see that we've got some orthophosphate remaining in the residue even after the soluble P step. And then if we also look at the organic P region, we can see that there we have extracted some of it, so it's not surprising that some of those peaks are shorter, but also we've certainly transformed the peaks in that area, which, as I said previously, will certainly make it harder for us to identify some of those organic P forms in subsequent steps of the fractionation process. For the phospholipid, we did have an extract, and then we're looking at the remaining residue here. We had issues with trying to analyse the extract on NMR. Basically, we run one sample for 24 hours, and at the end of the 24-hour process, we continued to get phase separation, so we were unable to present the spectra for the solution. So what we're looking at is that oat residue extracted with ethanol ether or ethanol ether chloroform, and we're looking at the proportion of phospholipids, or as I said previously, because we get hydrolysis of them in the alkaline solution, we're looking at alpha and beta glycerophosphate. In the original residue, we had 11% of the total extractable phosphorus as alpha and beta glycerophosphate, and after the extraction, we still had 9.8 or 9.6%. Remaining in the residue. So that suggests to us that only a small proportion, we're looking at 1.2 to 1.4% of the lipid P was actually extracted using either of those reagents. The other thing that we noted here is that certainly ethanol ether and ethanol ether chloroform were selective for alpha and beta glycerophosphate only, because the other peaks remained as they were in the original residue. So in summary, the speciation of residue P can certainly be compromised by the incomplete recovery of your intended phosphorus species and the fact that you also get transformation of other phosphorus species during the extraction process. So when you're interpreting the chemical composition from using chemical fractionation methods, it can be problematic, and perhaps the terminology used should not necessarily be based on the specific P species, but rather the extractant used, e.g. ethanol ether soluble phosphorus rather than calling it phospholipids. I'd just like to acknowledge some of the technicians and the funding for this project, and happy to take any questions.